Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Mike Rounds is a Republican U.S. Senator from the state of South Dakota. The unofficial results of last night's election have him winning re-election over Democrat Dan Ahlers, 68% to 32%. That's a 36-point difference. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds joins us now on the phone. Senator Rounds, thank you so much for making time for us today.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to visit for a while.
This has been an unusual election cycle, particularly for you, not only for the pandemic, but because of your wife's health. And as you get the results, I'm sure, not much time for a celebration, or if there is one, it's a subdued one in some ways with the amount of work to be done and the challenges that face our country and our families right now, including yours. Tell me a little bit about getting through this election and what it has been like for you.
I think you've laid it out very well. Not a lot of time for celebration. This is the most unique election I've ever been involved with. And, you know, it starts with the fact that, as you indicated, Gene was, diagnosed with a sarcoma a year and a half ago. And we've been battling that. A lot of support from all over South Dakota and lots of prayers being offered. We've been successful so far. She had most recently a surgery again in August, and just happened to coincide on the same day that I was supposed to have a debate. So it kind of, we made the decision that I would be there with Gene in the hospital. But it was that type of a campaign where it seemed like you're not just doing the issues surrounding and helping with issues on, you know, the family side with Gene. But then we also had the full-time job working in Washington at a time in which we had a lot of work to do. And we spent a lot more time in D.C. than we did back in South Dakota here this fall, which is contrary to what normally occurs during an election cycle where you have, you know, 23 members of the United States Senate that are Republican that are up for a reelection, and Republicans control the Senate, and yet we were making decisions to stay in Washington because we needed to get more things done. And then, you know, just simply the fact that it's not something anybody ever plans for, but when Justice Ginsburg passed away, it required then by constitutional directive that the president would make a nomination to the United States Supreme Court. Whether or not the Senate acts on it or not is what we call advice and consent, but in this particular case, the decision was made to move forward, which follows 130 years of precedence within the Senate where the Republican president and a Republican majority in the Senate, or the same party controlling both the House and both the presidency and the Senate, approve the recommendation of the president, where during that same 133 years, if the president and the Senate are of different parties, 10 times out of 10, there has not been an approval of the president's nominee. But once again, the president still is required by constitutional directive to make that nomination. So very interesting times, lots of things going on. And in the middle of it, as we visit right now on the day after the election, we still don't know the fate of the Senate. I see they've just called Senator Collins as being reelected with 51% of the vote in Maine, but most certainly it is now very, very close, and it looks like we might have retained control of the Senate, but it's still up for grabs.
Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court nomination and the process of that, the election in general, the Affordable Care Act and everything that's happening there, this is a really contentious, the pandemic, it goes without saying, a really contentious and divided time in America. Not necessarily the same story here at home as we look at some of you know, how South Dakotans turned out to the polls. But I want to talk about what happens next as we still wait for some of those results to come in and even wait for possible litigation. There is a lot of urgent work that needs to be done. Tell me a little bit about some of the things, like, you know, keeping the government open or new relief packages or Affordable Care Act. Like, what is some of that urgent work that you feel really needs to be tackled, even as we wait to find out if we will have a re-election of President Donald Trump or if we will have a new president in January in Joe Biden?
Well, and that will push a little bit the direction of what occurs between now and December. and then also then what occurs after the first of the year. My suspicion is that if Vice President Biden is successful in becoming the next president and President Trump is not reelected, then the appropriations process will probably start over again early in the first quarter of the year, and we'll probably end up with the agreement to do a continuing resolution into February or March. So that right now, the continuing resolution that started in October would expire, I believe, on December 11th, if my memory serves me correct. If the president had been reelected and the Senate had stayed in Republican hands and the House in Democrat hands, they may very well sit down and start working out a long-term appropriation process for the following year. But with the new administration, if he is elected, then he would want to put his mark on this appropriations process. And I would suspect that we'll just have a continuing resolution because the House would never agree to an appropriations deal if Vice President Biden is successful. In the meantime, we have a National Defense Authorization Act, which will be the 60th year that we will have found common ground to work through the issues on national defense and send a powerful message back to the men and women who wear the uniform that we're supporting them on a bipartisan basis. We've got work to do on it, but I think that is an item which still has a very strong possibility of being passed. COVID-19, the relief package, a phase four, still has a possibility of being passed. It'll depend really on the Speaker of the House, in my opinion. There was not much doubt in our minds that she had, no real interest in passing a product before the election, because that might be deemed as assisting the president in his reelection. Now that the election is behind us, one way or the other, if she has an interest in working with a COVID-19 relief package, we'll know, because she'll drop the several policy provisions that she had insisted be included in this appropriations package. She had insisted on additional assistance for cannabis activity within the United States. She had insisted on the elimination of the Hyde Act with regard to certain federal funding for abortion. And then she had insisted that individuals that were here that were not citizens of the United States also be allowed to participate in any stimulus program. Those were all three items which she clearly understood would never be accepted by the more conservative Republican Senate. And so it became pretty apparent that she was not going to actually negotiate for a package before the election. So I think while both sides laid out, went to the meetings and so forth, there wasn't much thought that it would ever happen. Now that the election is done, that's behind us. There is a possibility that something could happen in a COVID relief package between now and the end of the year. But I see Senator McConnell would prefer to do it after the end of the year, but that could change as well.
Do you think that Speaker Pelosi would delay a relief package for sick and dying Americans in order to not appear to be helping Donald Trump gain reelection? It seems like a heavy thing to say.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's, in my mind, there's very little doubt, but that she looked at this as the greater benefit of being able to do what they felt was appropriate afterwards for 4 years. If they were successful in taking the Senate and the House, the short-term delay was something that I believe she was prepared to accept. Most certainly we'll know, because if they do want to do a program like we did back in March, in which we did not have policy provisions in them, it most certainly is doable at this time. But if they continue to insist on those items, then we'll know that they want to wait until after the first of the year. So, look, I think Secretary Mnuchin clearly understood, because in our discussions with him on a weekly basis, he understood that there were some things there that they had to work through. They never got past the policy provisions, and most certainly some of the appropriation dollars that they wanted to move into the states was more challenging for Republicans, and it would have taken some compromise, but it would have been doable. But the policy provisions were clearly non-starters, and The speaker clearly understood that.
The Affordable Care Act will be taken up by the U.S. Supreme Court on November 10th, and we are in the middle of enrollment period for healthcare in the marketplace. And people in South Dakota are wondering, you know, do I sign up? Do I not sign up? What happens if the Supreme Court rules in favor of the administration and then I've just purchased or, you know, began a new healthcare plan? What's your recommendation for South Dakotans as they decide some of those really personal, especially during a pandemic, choices about seeking health care plans during this enrollment period while that is up in the air?
Yeah, look, first of all, if they're on health care now, don't change it. Look, go ahead and shop it, but be very careful about changing health care, just like you would be anytime. Those that are on Obamacare or Affordable Care Act should remain on it. There aren't a lot of other options out there. In South Dakota, at one time, we had 17 companies offering group insurance. We had 13 companies offering individual insurance. I think we're down to about three or four now. And it all happened because when Obamacare came in, most of them simply couldn't participate in the required portions of the program. So most of the competition has disappeared out there. With regard to Obamacare itself, I know that there was a lot of talk about the fact that it would suddenly just go away. That's not going to happen. Regardless, this particular court decision is very limited in nature, and my suspicion is that with a conservative court, they may very well look at parts of it and say certain parts of it have to be modified or changed or are not valid. But number one, I personally feel very confident that they're not going to walk in and say it's done, it's over, everybody's out. I do think they may suggest that there are certain limitations that would be placed on it, but I don't think anything that would replace it or that would be a conversion of this product would not provide for the coverage of pre-existing conditions, just as Obamacare does today. And to point it out, in South Dakota, before Obamacare was here, since 1994, we had a program in which we covered pre-existing conditions when you went from one company to another, but you had to be enrolled. So once you got into the system and stayed in the system, you didn't have to worry about those pre-existing conditions anymore. We even made it so that Medicaid recipients, when they came off of Medicaid, that was considered appropriate prior coverage, and you could move into a group plan and still consider and do it without regard to pre-existing conditions. So it is
we're
going
to have to leave it
stay there.
In the interest of time, we're going to have to leave it there. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate your time today.
I appreciate it. Thanks.